Investment banker, university professor, and radio host. Civil rights attorney Mark Harris wears many hats. Professor Harris joins us today to discuss his journey as well as his perspective on the demands for police reform in the wake of the death of George Floyd. Mark, what do the local demonstrations following the death of George Floyd mean to you, coming years after the demands for police reform and the deaths of Joseph Mann and Stephon Clark?
You know, Scott, you've been on this journey with me a long time. I want to first thank you for allowing me to share with you and your viewers my perspective. This, sadly, even extends beyond the beginning, if you will. For me, it started as I was being raised in South Central L.A. and unfortunately saw the plumes of smoke rise from South Central L.A. in response to the Watts riots of 1965. I've been in the game that long. I was an eight-year-old child in 1965, but it left an indelible impression on me and put me on the journey that I now find myself on today.
Well, you know, prior to the recent uprising and the protests in downtown Sacramento, one thing that's kind of ironic about this moment, and I'm not trying to bring levity to it, but the last large outdoor gathering in the city was the annual MLK March that almost had the air of a community festival. Mm-hmm. What's going on beneath the surface of Sacramento that so many of us have been missing and that the recent protests embody?
You know, it's a great question, Scott. I am troubled by the fact that we feel the need to protest in the manner that we felt the need to protest. There are a couple of things. Let me peel this back in a couple of layers, if I may. You're right. It's not disrespectful at all to celebrate the memory of Martin Luther King Jr. in the manner that Sacramento does year in and year out. It's one of the great comings together for our city is the MLK march and rally and celebration. Unfortunately, as you pointed out, over the past several years up to and including this year, we've had case after case after case. You mentioned Joseph Mann. There was Dejan Flanaw. Of course, Stephon Clark. And it goes on and on and on. Countless other names that I could recite to you and your viewers, some of whom you've heard of, some of whom you haven't. We just had a case settled with the Sacramento Sheriff's Department where a gentleman was throwing small pebbles at law enforcement and running around screaming incoherently. Clearly had some kind of a mental breakdown. And the way that the Sacramento Sheriff's Department responded to that was to leave him dead in the street. Something is wrong here in Sacramento, and we need to rise up and protest against it.
And I'm curious, you represented the Joseph Mann family, correct?
Correct.
What did you learn from representing that family in their litigation with the city about this community's law enforcement and their practices that all of us should know as we're considering the issue of police reform?
So it's great. You mentioned a couple of my different hats, one of which I'm very proud of is founding the Law Enforcement Accountability Directive, along with Richard Owen, a great educator here in Sacramento, and Rashid Sadiq, who's been on the forefront of community activism a long time. What John Burris, the attorney from Oakland, who was the lead counsel on the Mann case, allowed me to do is to separate my law hat from my activist hat. He allowed me to be an activist relative to that case, to not be constrained with the professional responsibilities and ethical constraints that we as lawyers have, and to really swing for the fences to call for transparency and accountability within the law enforcement community here in Sacramento.
I'm curious also, you talk about the many hats that you wear, and one of them is your radio show on KDEE.
Yes.
And the conversations that you have there, and I tune in, those conversations many times are different than the conversations that we might have downtown at the Sutter Club, fine restaurant somewhere, or frankly, the types of receptions that take place among the powerful and the influential.
Yes.
Region. Give us an insight into the conversations you've been having on the show that frankly need to be conversations that are going on a far broader basis than just on your radio program.
Oh, Scott, thank you. That's a great question. Again, we're proud of our show, Family Matters Forum. It airs every Monday from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific time. And this show we had, just to give you an example, Let me start with last week's show. We had Mayor Steinberg. Mayor Steinberg felt compelled to come on our show and to share with our audience his perspective about the die-in, which occurred in the Pocket neighborhood that he lives in and that I live in. We're Pocket neighbors. 2,000 persons lying out in the street to protest what was going on here in Sacramento. And we wanted him to come in his own words on the show and speak about it. This week, we had a brilliant new leader, Katie Valenzuela, a city council member-elect, Katie Valenzuela, who will be representing District 4, now currently occupied by Steve Hansen. She came on and just lit up the airwaves with talent and strength. We had people contacting us from all different parts of the country saying, we didn't know about her, but boy, we're going to know about her. She's amazing. We had a 17-year-old, Monet Clark, who came on and talked about some of the controversy at St. Francis Catholic High School here in Sacramento and some of the claims of discrimination. So we try to keep it national, but we really keep it with a local focus. And that's what makes us very proud that our show on KDEE gives us a chance to have really courageous conversations.
And in those conversations, for instance, you reference the conversation related to St. Francis. And those types of conversations seem to be bubbling to the surface in this moment, and they're uncommon conversations. What is it about this moment that's different than, say, all of the other deaths and calls for reform at this moment? What's so different about right now?
I think that, to quote the late Fannie Lou Hamer, we're sick and tired of being sick and tired, Scott.
I've heard that.
Many of us who are older have been fighting the fight for a very long time. Many of our younger relatives and young friends and young leaders in our community, quite honestly, affix some of the blame for these problems upon us. They tell us that if we had done more, had been more aggressive, more assertive, maybe they wouldn't have to be taking up the mantle today. And to a certain extent, they're right. So I think part of it is just being sick and tired of being sick and tired. When you add to it a countless stream of death, we're not talking about dismemberment. We're not talking about people having a recovery period and being able to be embraced by their family again. We're talking about people who've been murdered, for lack of a better word. Today, in the latest police shooting, in Atlanta, Georgia, murder charges were brought against those officers. We're not talking about negligence on the part of law enforcement. So I think that's what's doing it more than anything else at this moment in time, Scott.
Is there a common thread, though, that runs through all of these cases nationally? Given your work with the Ben Crump Law Firm?
Yes.
That firm has a particular reputation for representing people in these types of cases. So I know you must talk to your colleagues. What runs through all of these that we should all reckon with?
That you should, as a person who walks on the streets that you walk, who sleeps in the bed in which you sleep, you need to understand that each of those victims, whether it was Arbery or Taylor or Floyd, could be you or someone you love. I think that's it. Ben Crump, who's the head of our firm, is an amazing civil rights lawyer. He's the Johnny Cochran of Thurgood Marshall of our era. And he formed a national law firm. It's one of the few times an African-American owned firm has the resources and the expertise to extend on a national basis. Our firm is headquartered in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm the managing partner of the firm here in Sacramento. And it is a firm unlike anything I've ever been associated with. I know at some point we'll talk about my more traditional corporate experience and background, but this is the best of the best in terms of resources and professionalism that also is Black owned. And I'm very, very proud to be a part of the Crump Law Firm.
And putting on your hat as a diversity professor at UC Merced and taking the long view, what worries you most if you look out, say, 6 months from now, and things are relatively the same as they were before the protest begins, or began, I should say?
Hopelessness, despair. I'm an economics professor, as you know, Scott. I was an investment banker and a Clinton administration official in economics at the Department of Commerce. I think what bothers me is these young people already know that they won't have, in most cases, the same quality of life their parents even have. You've got inflation at levels that will continue to rise. You have school debt at astronomically high levels. You have any number of reasons that their life won't be the American dream the way you and I define the American dream, let alone our parents' definition of the American dream. So what I worry about more than anything, and I teach 500 students an academic year. So in addition to practicing law, I teach all year long, including summer. I'm committed to that. That's my give back. That's my pay it forward. And I talk to those 500 young people about not giving up, always being diligent, always trying to push the ball forward, always trying to be a force for change. I think that's the thing I worry about the most.
You know, you talk about your work with young people. Let's take you back to when you were a little bit younger than you are. You started in investment banking with Bear Stearns. Share with us, what led you from investment banking in real estate development to a career, one, as an educator at a university, but also as an attorney representing the victims of police violence?
I'll try to do the best that I can. I was raised in a family with a mother who was an amazing educator. My mother, we called her the Michael Jordan of our family because she never stayed retired, Scott. She retired from teaching in LA Unified in the inner cities, moved to Sacramento where she taught for years at Kennedy High School in South Sac and at Sacramento Charter High School in Oak Park. So she was a woman who just burned with a desire to help our community. And the way that she chose to help the community was through education, through teaching and counseling. So that was how it started for me, to always want to have the ability to give back in that way. But I was smitten, as you were at one point, with politics and the political process, and went to work in the Capitol for Chris Holden, a current member of the legislature's father, the Honorable Nate Holden. He gave me my first internship. And then current assembly member Autumn Burke's mother, Yvonne Burke, gave me my first internship in Congress in Washington, D.C. So I've had great mentors, great role models, and politics gave me the opportunity to really hone my desire to help in constructive, credible ways. But one thing that became very clear, and you know this very well, is you got to figure out how to pay for the bill. When the bill gets passed around the banquet table, it's the person who can pay that is the most powerful person at the table. That's what drew me into investment banking. We had all these hopes and desires for our community. Very few people, when the bill got passed around the table, could pick up the check. And the investment banking community could surely pick up the check.
Okay. And when you think about, you talked about some of the people that impacted you along the way. Was there any single event that took place that set kind of your North Star for combining both capital and being involved in the capital markets and business, and also this public activism part of your career as well?
Yes, is the short answer. And, you know, when I said pick up the check, I didn't mean with the bank account or the expense account of an investment banker. I don't want that to be misinterpreted. I mean what you just touched on, having a knowledge of how the capital markets operate. Capital markets, as many of your viewers know, are where stocks and bonds and commodities and other financial instruments are traded. But more importantly, it's where markets are created. And what I learned how to do was to take an idea, let's just say to build a new school and figure out how to structure that debt, sell it on Wall Street and make that into a reality. That was fascinating to me. I had no idea before I went to Wall Street that that was even possible. So I was proud to be recruited by one of my mentors, Bill Hayden, who's called the Lion of Wall Street, the Jackie Robinson, the first African-American managing director on Wall Street, was my mentor. He was on our radio show this past week as well. And they taught me how to pay for things that were just dreams for a lot of people.
Was there anyone else along the way, you know, you talk about Mr. Hayden, you've talked about your mother, who, as you were deciding that path and walking along it, you said, that's somebody who I want to be like. Was there anything like that?
The late Johnny Cochran. Johnny Cochran was older than I am. He was a mentor, a friend. I still see him every time he'd come up to Northern California, particularly Sacramento, I'd pick him up from the airport, have a chance to spend time with him. A dear, dear friend and mentor, one of the best lawyers I'd ever seen. I had a chance to witness him at trial. And for all the glitz and glamour that came from the OJ trial, that was just the small tip of the iceberg of the talent of Johnny Cochran. So I was making money in the private sector. I was in an established corporate environment as a managing director. And as you and your viewers know, that's a partner. That's the highest level on Wall Street. I was at Bear Stearns and then eventually Payne Webber. But I wanted to dovetail back over to community activism. And I was told that because I had not practiced law in quite a few years, and even when I did, I was a business lawyer, that transitioning to civil rights just wasn't done. You couldn't do it, Attorney Harris. You have to be a civil rights lawyer right out of law school, or it's impossible to do. But I was blessed to be mentored by people like John Burris, the great civil rights lawyer, and Johnny Cochran. And I was able to develop a certain skill set and talent in the space of civil rights law. And I'm very, very happy to all those great mentors of mine who made it possible for me to do that. Mm-hmm.
In addition to all of those hats that you wear, Mark, on a daily basis, the most important ones is your husband and a father.
Yes.
How do those two roles affect what's important to you today?
It's real easy. I tell people faith, family, and fidelity are what drive me. Those three things, I wake up and go to bed with those three things on my mind. I'm blessed that I have a partner. One of the things that my partner and I are doing, we've been married for almost 40 years. It'll be 40 years next year. One of the things that we're doing is teaching a class this summer called Women in Executive Leadership. And one of the concepts that we're exploring is the relationship between the first couple of California. Never before has there been a designation of the spouse of the governor as first partner. I think it's important because that's what she is. Our house operates on a partnership basis. If anything, it's probably 60-40 Dr. Mari's way. But it's worked well for us. We've been able to raise two wonderful sons, both of whom are social justice warriors in their own regard. Eric represents the disabled community in the state capitol as an advocate. And Martin works at Alliance for Justice in Washington, D.C., where they're trying to find the next round of progressive federal judicial appointments. So we're very, very proud of both of our law school graduates and great, great human beings, Eric and Martin.
Well, it's obvious that they followed in their parents' footsteps in terms of their own activism. As you were raising your sons about how to pass along the best of what was poured into you, what is it that you and your wife, Mari, focused on in trying to expose them to how they need to shape their own political and moral thoughts?
Putting them around people like you and Celeste. I mean, obviously, putting people in our son's space who have their best interest at heart, who witness and walk the walk of morality, quite honestly, and ethical behavior. We always said we didn't care what our kids became as long as they were good people. And we're very happy to report that they are good people. And they'll be good people for the rest of their lives with God's grace. So we're very committed to the fact that it's not about how much you own. It's not about how much bling people think you have. It's not about any material assets. It's about your character. And we stress that with them. And I'm happy to say that both of them are young men of excellent character.
Mm-hmm. When you think about everything from hosting radio to your work in the legal arena, what's been your most satisfying achievement?
You know, I don't reflect on those things much, Scott. I'm still working, man. I'm still getting up every day. We were smiling because of COVID. Everybody is back in the house right now. We're trying to fight from here, we say. And our youngest flew back from Washington around the middle of March and was just told that he can't even return to his office in Washington until September 15th, believe it or not. And one of the things he said, we had a great conversation last night in the yard after everything had slowed down. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And he said, Dad, every time I think that I'm getting close to some finish line, I look at you and Mom, and you guys are going 12 and 14 and 16 hour days. We're working hard. We're full of energy. we just are loving our lives. And he said, that's the life I want to live. I want to live a life of fulfillment. I want to live a life of service. And I think that's probably the highest accomplishment for Mari and I, is that we've raised two kids who understand service first.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because recently I had an opportunity to speak with a number of the young people who have been at the forefront of the protests that have been going on in the region. Mm-hmm. And I asked them along the way, what are their aspirations? What are their hopes? What are they working toward? And a lot of what you just said poured out of them as well. Mm-hmm. What are the components of the conversation that we need to have as a region in order to make sure that all of those voices have the tools and, frankly, the North Star to point toward, so that that way we all can ensure that everyone gets to move forward together?
We need to make sure that we're both listening and hearing. And by that, Scott, I mean, you were the one who had the vision to invite myself and Tanya Faison. When people didn't know who Tanya Faison was, Tanya Faison, of course, is one of the founders of Black Lives Matter Sacramento. You asked the two of us to come on your show, and it really was the beginning of the relationship between Tanya and myself sharing an appearance on your show 4 or 5 years ago. And what happens a lot of times, particularly with older people, is because the younger people are operating in a manner that is unfamiliar to us, we want to reject it and we want to criticize it. I'll tell you what I mean. There were so many people, when I asked Tanya to be a co-host on our Family Matter show, who were just livid. Why would you do that? That organization is not a credible organization. How many members do they have? Who's the president? What's their bylaws look like? That's not the way these young people operate, and they don't need to. They have social media, they have technology, they have a whole different way of doing things. There is no way that in all the time you and I have been on this planet, we could have ever imagined that there would be 50 different states that would have demonstrations on anything related to social justice and civil rights. Then when you add to that the fact that it was global, I would tell older people to shut up and get out of the way, to provide advice if advice is sought, to be the wise counsel, to walk the walk in our own lives and make sure that we're living our lives appropriately. But these young people have it. Every great revolutionary change was led by young people. This one is not any different.
Well, you talk about every great revolutionary change it has been driven by the young people. I want to reach back to one of your predecessors, mm-hmm. in whose footsteps you follow. There used to be an attorney for most of the 20th century in Sacramento by the name of Nathaniel Colley.
I knew just who you were going to say.
And he is a legend. He was a legendary civil rights attorney and a first on so many things. If Mr. Colley was here with us today and he was comparing the era where he opened up so many things in California in terms of opportunity for all, and he was looking at today, what do you think that he would be heartened by, and what do you think he'd be most concerned with?
That's a great question, because I knew Mr. Colley very well. He was another mentor, probably the biggest mentor I had here in Sacramento. I've had some great people invest in me personally. He is one of them. Dr. Lee is another great Sacramentan who invested in me early. Ida Sidnor, and on and on and on. And all of those folks represent a group of folks who would not give up, who would never give up. And I think he would say, agitate, agitate, agitate. If you're a lawyer, do it in the legal process. If you're a teacher, do it in academia. If you're a member of the medical profession, do it through that process in terms of bringing accessibility to medical care and healthcare. So I think that's what Nathaniel Colley represents to me. I think he was a great Sacramentan, another brilliant, brilliant mind, went to Tuskegee Institute as an undergraduate and then to Yale Law School, just would constantly be pushing the envelope relative to the law, and set a great example of what all of us should do. Wherever you can get in, you ought to fit in and do what you can to move the ball forward.
And in one sentence, given all you've done and learned along the way, if you could pass along a life lesson that you experienced and share with your younger self to ease his path, what would that one sentence be?
Embrace the role of being a servant leader.
Well said. Thank you, Mark. Well, that's our show. Thanks to our guests and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syphax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.